Okay, hi, friend. It's been too long since I've been able to contact you in this way. By the way, this is the anniversary of the day that the university, or rather the Seven Ray Institute, was accepted in New Jersey as a nonprofit educational organization. So it's been going all these years, and that's been since 1985, and here it is, 2021. So that's, 36 years, something like that. Well, okay, this is program number 42, and we're nearing the end. I keep on saying that, but it seems to take a while to make progress because there are so many other programs which have to be sent out. The segue to this is DK telling his group members, you are in no way unique or far ahead of the senior world aspirants. In that lies cause for encouragement and humility. Well, I can certainly see the humility part here, and the fact that so much of value can lie ahead for them. What is really a senior world aspirant? Well, a true aspirant has taken the first degree. I suppose a senior world aspirant is closing in on the second degree, and maybe has taken that degree and is an accepted disciple. DK goes on to say, in this little segue, it is naturally not my intention to state who is being prepared for any particular initiation, and that is a matter for each of you to discover for himself. Well, occasionally it would seem he violated his own rule. He had to speak to ISGL in terms of him taking possibly the second initiation. I think he spoke to DHB, was it? Who was a pretty astute astrologer. And DHB was in the Glamour group, and he spoke to him of preparing for the third initiation, and he otherwise gave some hints which we could interpret as indicating the initiation before the individual. Sometimes it seems that one cannot get into the ashram of a Chohan of a Ray unless one has taken the second degree. And he somehow hints in the case of RSU that now she is back in the ashram of her own master. So that might indicate the second degree. I mean, if you read with care, the hints are there. Oh, I've made up a little mantra there. Okay. Anyway, you must discover this for yourself, he says. And it is a matter of interior orientation that we, in our, let's say, higher soul moments, can achieve. And he goes on to say, and not a matter of outside information. So it belongs to us to discover our interior orientation towards any particular initiation, and always remember that the true disciple is being prepared for initiation. Then we can go on. This would take us to number 95. We would have begun page 95 and begin on 95. So let's see what he has to say. I definitely want to make sure that I'm showing you the right screen. Okay. So he says, one point anent the taking of the first three major initiations, as let me say, there are these minor initiations which sensitize the applicant to the process and bring in more group orientation. I think he discusses these in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, but they are not really the major monastic initiations. When we begin with the birth of the Christ in the heart, we are, although we're taking preparatory initiations, we are also to be considered beginning a series of the true monastic initiations. So the three, I think what he's saying here, he's counting initiation 1, 2, and 3. He said he was not preparing people for the third degree, but then that did seem to change along the way. And this man, DHB, a Virgo with Sagittarius rising and the moon in Taurus, by the name of William Miller, was, he says, reminding him of himself when he was preparing for the third initiation. So, let me say, search out the requirements for these degrees. And don't be over anxious about it. The main thing is to work with the good effect that can be had by your expression of love and harmony and care for others. We know that the people who are overmuch concerned with initiation can fall into an egotistical condition, and that is with the eyes too much upon the personality. So one point, I'm reading DK now, one point anent the taking of the first three major initiations I would like to refer to at this point. It is that they have always to be taken when in a physical body and upon the physical plane, thus demonstrating initiate consciousness through both mind and brain. This is a point not often emphasized and sometimes contradicted. Well, I seem to recall that there are some of the higher initiations which may be taken without the physical brain per se, but this is, I think, the general rule. They have always to be taken in a physical body and with a physical brain. So it's possible to, may I say, prepare for these initiations when one is out of the body, and to a certain extent, the work in Devachan helps prepare, and also the work for a master after one leaves the body, such as a number of people did undergo, and DK told us who they were. I'm remembering particularly PDW, the Jesuit, KES, the military man, CDP, for her dedicated work with the children who had been killed during the war. Maybe there were more. I think it is the tendency of the master to put you to work with a consciousness very much like your own before you had departed the physical body. We sometimes imagine that everything will drastically change when we are on the other side. There will be changes, of course, and the amount of freedom, in one sense, will be greater. But at the same time, we pretty much inherit ourselves. We inherit our own consciousness and continue on trying to be helpful. So initiation, may I say, usually involves a bringing through. At least for the first two initiations of the threshold, and even the third initiation, which from another perspective is called the first major initiation. Much depends on how we use the word major. If we compare those little preparatory initiations along the way which sensitize the man to greater group consciousness, then the first three normal monastic initiations are definitely major. If we compare initiation 3 with the first two of these major initiations, then the first two are initiations of the threshold and are not considered major in the sense that the third initiation is considered true initiation and major. I noticed that if I had green in back of me, maybe there would not be these background flickers of the image disappearing and the pillow I use here appearing. But anyway, it's not the image that's important. I'm just staying with you, as it were. And DK goes on. I would also like to point out, with all the clarity and power at my disposal, and may I say, that's a lot, as we know how clearly DK can speak and how powerfully his words can affect us. I would also like to point out, he says, with all the clarity and power at my disposal, the very deep necessity for humility and its constantly recurring expression. What is humility called? An adjusted sense of right proportion? Isn't that it? An adjusted sense of right proportion. And what I'm going to do here is, well, maybe it takes a little time to change colors, but the very deep necessity, he says, for humility. I'm remembering some of his words to RSU, who is such a tremendous help to Alice Bailey in editing the books. And he had a number of things to say to her that maybe were not, or maybe did give the reasons for her difficulty, which was an isolated first ray astral body, which didn't really let the love nature come through in her personality. They were nothing but hardline rays, and that is unusual. But he did tell her that she had a deep sense of humility. So this goes a long way. Remember, everybody, an adjusted sense of right proportion. Seeing yourself in the larger scheme of things and seeing various things in a still larger scheme of things, knowing actually what's big, what's little, what's important, what's not, all of these are part of humility. It's not some kind of false humility which really veils pride. We're familiar with that. People pretend to be humble. They, so to speak, eat humble pie. But underneath, they have this sense that, in fact, they're doing quite well and better than others. And they know that humility is a state to achieve if one wants to advance. And so they put on the appearance of humility. Well, let me say, let's not be one of those. Now, he goes on to say, I refer not to an inferiority complex. Here I am babbling on about an adjusted sense of right proportion, and I didn't even see that it lies immediately ahead. Well, probably from so many years of reading his books, certain of the key sentences, the golden sentences, have stuck with me. I refer not to an inferiority complex, and may I say he does talk about one of his disciples, I think in the education group, with the raise 21213, who has or had such an inferiority complex, and I think it caused him to make some poor decisions. But instead, he refers to, but to that adjusted sense of right proportion, which equips its possessor with a balanced point of view as to himself, his responsibilities, and his life work. Well, friends, just pause for a moment and ask yourself, you know, do you have that? This adjusted sense of right proportion. Which equips you, its possessor, with a balanced point of view. Here we have Libra, right? As a sign which, when rightly used, can promote humility, because it is the sign in which correct proportion can be seen and understood. So, as he says here, an adjusted sense of right proportion which equips its possessor with a balanced point of view as to himself, his responsibilities, and his life work. And may I say that some of us try to do too much. Some of us, on the other hand, don't see opportunity when it presents, and we fail to seize the day. Remember that the strongest planet in Libra is Saturn, which is not only the hierarchical ruler, but the planet exalted in the sign Libra. And remember what DK tells us of Saturn, that it is the god of opportunity. It is the planet of opportunity. Not the planet that gives us so much rope that we can go out and hang ourselves, as the old saying goes, But the planet which makes us face that which must be done. And when we face it and are victorious in relation to it, then we have fulfilled karma to a degree, and greater freedom is ours. So that planet can be a great friend. It's one of the chief planets of discipleship. Okay, friends, I'm sorry. I was interrupted by an emergency. We are trying to do broadcasts from two places, and anyway, maybe the problem is solved. And we were working on the idea of true humility, which DK calls an adjusted sense of right proportion, which equips its possessor, and hopefully, may I say, hopefully that is who we are, he goes on, with a balanced point of view. As to himself, his responsibilities, and his life work. Now, we go on further with DK. This, when present, will enable him to view himself dispassionately and his presented opportunities with equal dispassion. Now, dispassion is the attitude that we are to have when addressing our astral body. Discipline, let us say, for the physical body, dispassion for the astral, discrimination for the mental, and decentralization for the personality. And if we go a little further than that, maybe detachment in the larger sense rules the whole. Now, going on with DK, I guess one perforce must work with interruptions, especially when something immediate is required. Okay, he says, undoubtedly, all disciples, you among them, have speculated upon your status and standing upon the path, and upon the status of your co-disciples. Well, let me say, yes, it's natural, and sometimes it can turn into a kind of disease, which includes an ambitious attitude, a personally ambitious attitude. DK goes on, that is, after all, both natural and human. Some of you are too humble in the personal sense and not in the sense of true humility. Well, let me just fill this in with the idea of this natural human response to speculate upon one's standing upon the path, as long as one does not become obsessed by such speculation. And yes, I should add here, that yes, it is both natural and human. Some of you are too humble, he says. In the personal sense, and not in the sense of a true humility, he is distinguishing, is he not, between, so often we find aspirants and disciples putting themselves down in the personal sense, and not really looking on with that adjusted sense of right proportion. So DK goes on and says, by that I mean you are so afraid of pride and bombast and an overestimation of your capacities that you are untrue to the realities and belittle the power of your souls. Now, he's going to tell us that RSU is one of those who does this. She was the very close companion in the work with Alice Bailey, and was, you know, faithful and helpful for so many years. But still, it led to a kind of fabrication, to an untruth. And I'm remembering that when Alice Bailey said, well, I'm just a perfectly ordinary English woman, she was putting herself in that same kind of category. One who was too humble in the personal sense, because she knew of the liabilities of pride and bombast. On the other hand, we do find those people who are filled with those undesirable traits. So maybe both RSU and Alice Bailey had a bit of that same problem, but here he's talking about RSU, whose name was Regina Keller. She was a Capricorn person, and with Cancer rising, I think, and again, I think the moon in Taurus, I think so. I could look it up here. So many of them did have the moon in Taurus. Interesting. Because it's an exalted position and presents great opportunity, and at the same time, it can hold you back through the quality of inertia, or tamas, as it's called among the three gunas, inertia, rajas, and sattva. So now he talks about this person. I do have somewhere a photo of her with a still more advanced disciple, Roberto Assagioli. It's a friendly photograph, of course, taken long ago. But apparently this is a problem, to put yourself in a lower category than you should normally be presenting yourself. So she's guilty here. Of being untrue to realities and belittling the power of her own soul. So DK is looking for an adjustment. RSU is a case in point, he says, and needs to walk humbly in the spiritual life, which involves a correct recognition of place and opportunity, and not this constant emphasis upon her inability to measure up. Well, that tells us something about a frank assessment of our own capacities. I think I'll repeat that. DK says, RSU is a case in point. And what does that RSU stand for? Maybe this is a time we should look at it. Restraint. That's the italicized letter. S is strength and U is understanding. RSU. How valuable it must have been to have certain keynotes pointed out to us or to them. Sometimes I identify maybe overly much, but I do identify with that group and realize that the people he was talking to at that time are very much like many of us, and in the future opportunity will come for I think quite direct instruction and quite direct opportunity to work. So she needs to walk humbly in the spiritual life, and that's in the spiritual life, not just having the personality act in a manner humble, apparently humble. She needs to walk humbly in the spiritual life, which involves a correct recognition of place and opportunity, and not this constant emphasis on her inability to measure up. Now, at one point in the whole discussion, he did say that, yes, she has a true humility. But anyway, he goes on to say, she owes it to my group of disciples and to me to see herself as she truly is, a disciple in preparation for a certain initiation and with much wisdom at her disposal. I spoke a little bit before about how that may have been the second initiation. You know, maybe one of those who was being offered the second initiation in that particular incarnation, because she did, after all, or was transferred to her master, Kutumi, and I think you cannot really be active in his ashram unless the second initiation is taken. I mean, and that would apply to all the masters. If you have a Chohan of the Ray to be working really as part of his Ray Ashram, which includes the minor seven, you have to have achieved the second degree. He may point out, well, this is your destination and this is your true master, but DK is taking over the training of those who have not quite achieved that second degree status. Now, WDS, he was the man I spoke of, I think, in Australia. I'm not sure. But 21213, second ray soul, first ray personality, second ray mind, first ray astral body, third ray etheric physical body. But isn't it interesting, just for a moment, that DK puts what RSU should be doing in terms of an obligation to the group and to himself? You know, perhaps that would be an incentive to her, but I'm sure he means what he says. She owes it to my group of disciples and to me to see herself as she truly is. And look, this is an act of perception. You have an obligation to perceive in a certain manner. It's not just an outer doing. Now he's being, you know, circumspect about what initiation is offered. And with all that Capricorn, you know, you would think possibly it would be the third degree. But we cannot be sure. Now, WDS, I think his name was, let's see here, maybe I can, yeah, he was in the education group, and his name was David King, and apparently from what I have here, he was a Gemini. Apparently a Gemini. And he did last and was incorporated into the new seed group, which DK reorganized when the onset of the emergencies of war made it necessary. Yeah. WDS, he says, suffers from an inferiority complex, which drives him to an exterior enforcement of his personality upon others. May I say, that's an interesting and familiar psychological dynamic. He, after all, and this man does have a first-ray personality, so it would not be hard to compensate for the inferiority complex with personal first-ray pressure. So anyway, DK says WDS suffers from an inferiority complex, which drives him to an exterior enforcement of his personality upon others, and expresses itself in a subtle spiritual jealousy of those who impress themselves upon his consciousness as his spiritual superiors. May I say, there are times when you just know that psychologically Master DK is going to speak straightly. He is not going to mince words, so that's quite a psychological analysis. But he is, as it were, standing back and looking at this in general, and he's not saying, you, WDS, have this. Well, maybe in the letters there will be something that ties in with what he just said in the larger sense. He needs, says DK, he needs to accept himself as he is, to be glad that there are those who guarantee to him the possibility of future unfoldment. See, may I say, therein lies the right way to approach our spiritual superiors. Repeating, there are those who guarantee to him the possibility of future unfoldment, because they have already achieved more than he has. And then to forget about himself as he accepts discipleship. So right there's a hint about accepted discipleship, accepting discipleship, and accepted discipleship. And then to forget about himself as he accepts discipleship and finds himself so busy in true service, for which we can go to the laws of the soul and esoteric psychology too. There we will understand service in new ways, including service as soul radiation. So he needs to forget about himself as he accepts discipleship. Apparently, may I say, it's possible to reject it. I mean, the opportunity may be there, but one can reject. And he goes on, find himself so busy in true service that he has no time for ceaseless comparison with others. That's quite a good hint for us, isn't it? Just throw yourself into the work and don't succumb to this putting yourself down or compensating from the inferiority complex by asserting over others, but really care about the work, the service, more than one cares about comparison with others. So self-forgetfulness, correct, friends, turns out to be a really important method there really is work to be done, and humanity is in a tough place at the moment. And it's not being helped by the warring against aspirants and disciples by the Lodge of Darkness. That's what he says, they war militantly against the disciple. I guess, I probably am not going to say it correctly, but basically, forget yourself, focus on the plan, the work needs you. Well, going on a bit, true humility is based on fact, DK says, on vision and on time pressures. Well, maybe it's an issue of seeing very clearly what is, and on the necessities of the moment. Under these necessities, one has no business making ceaseless comparisons with others. I think Ralph Waldo Emerson talked about envy being a useless quality. He used the word better than useless. It's an inimical quality, really. We'll all make it through because we are all that one thing, which is the supervisor, the universal logos of this universe and all universes. It's just a question of when this little subdivision of the Great One will make it through. But the end is sure. So when talking about the basis of true humility, he's going to tell us here, an adjusted sense of right proportion is based on fact, on vision, soul vision, we might. Sorry. We might say, and on time pressures. When the press of time for immediate action comes into focus, it is an essential. And we don't have time to waste in matters that deal with the status of the lower ego or the personality. DK, it goes on to tell us, here I give you a hint and would ask you to think deeply on these three foundations of a major personality attitude, which must be held and demonstrated before each initiation. And he says, I would remind you that there must always be humility in the presence of true vision. And what are these three? A basis of fact, a basis of vision, which requires true humility, and a basis of awareness of the pressure of time. Look, even the planetary logos is bound to the pressures of time. We're told in, I think, Rays and the Initiations that the time-space schedule of the planetary logos could not be enacted without the institution of group initiation. So, in one way, in terms of eternity, we have infinite time, and always have had. In another way, there's a time-space schedule for every finite universe, or especially for the parts within it. And increasingly, we have to be aware of that. That makes our work practical and brings through the original purposes of our particular universal logos or much lower but great entities, galactic logoi, constellation logoi. Solar logoi, planetary logoi, and groups, nations and groups, and our very self. When it tells us that time is of the essence, can we fathom that, really? In my view, the true essence, which is being to me, that transcends what we normally call time. But I think that that saying means time is vitally important. The time is, and space are ruled by Saturn, and to me anyway, essentiality is beyond any conditioned rulership. And all of those planetary qualities, maybe, I think space has a lot to do with Jupiter, but generally under Saturn, time and space come, well, there's something still more fundamental than any particular quality or activity that can be related to the planets or to logoi and constellation logoi beyond them. Time and essence. So DK goes on and says, this experiment which I am undertaking has its dangers. Okay. We know, don't we, that DK frequently talks about the risks in treading the thorny path of occultism. It's not just the few thorns. Let's see what he describes as the dangers. The disciples, he says, in a master's ashram upon the inner planes know somewhat the status of their co-disciples, but they do not always carry this knowledge through into the brain consciousness. This is, let me see here. I'm going to just emphasize this factor about the dangers. But DK is telling us that on the inner planes, the disciples know somewhat the status of their co-disciples, but they do not always, maybe sometimes, they do not always carry this knowledge through into the brain consciousness. This is, he says, very largely a protective factor, because they could not be trusted to handle the knowledge correctly upon the physical plane. Well, this is interesting. They might, DK says, be supercritical of a fellow disciple who was temporarily not living up to his initiation objective. They might be subtly jealous or unduly self-depreciative. They might treat the disciple who is ahead of them upon the path as someone superior and set apart, and thereby complicate his problem and his efforts. It's quite a list, isn't it? They might lose a sense of proportion as to initiation itself, as to its processes and its states, and this through too close and an approach to, or a misunderstanding of, another struggling initiate disciple. I think he calls Roberto Saccioli that an initiate disciple. Now, the pitfalls, says DK, are many, and I tell you to beware. Okay, so I'm going to list all the things that could go wrong if that knowledge from the inner planes were carried through into the brain. All kinds of misbehaviors or inappropriate behaviors could occur. This is an important list. Can we keep this in mind? How we handle knowledge when it comes through the brain onto the physical plane? They might be supercritical of a fellow disciple who was temporarily, note that, because I think no true disciple deviates forever, who was temporarily not living up to his initiation objective. They might be subtly jealous or unduly self-depreciative. That would be, would it not, putting themselves down in the false sense of humility, when in the presence of a more advanced disciple. They might treat the disciple who is ahead of them upon the path of initiation as someone superior and set apart. May I say, inducing the factor of separation into the whole relationship. Anyway, as D.K. says, as someone superior and set apart, and thereby complicate his problem and his effort. I'm thinking about some sixth-ray issues that enter here. So often there is with the sixth-ray an exaltation of the apparently superior one, followed by the attempt to tear down the one that one had previously exalted. You see it a lot. And further, I'm repeating here what Master D.K. has been saying, they might lose a sense of proportion as to initiation itself. May I say, getting so consumed by the subject that the real helpfulness and service becomes almost a second thought to one's own initiatory status. So they might lose the sense of proportion as to initiation itself, as to its processes and its states, and this through too close an approach to, or a misunderstanding of, another struggling initiate. You can go too close to people, and sometimes when you try to do that as a student of a teacher, you tie the hands of that teacher and bind the feet. D.K. goes on to say, the pitfalls are many, and I tell you to beware. Attend to your own life. I almost had inserted the word little life. Attend to your own life and your own business. Speculate not as to the status of the other disciples in my group, who are your close cooperators and co-sharers in my experiment. But note that. Speculate not as to the status. Of your co-disciples. Well, right there, even though it's quite natural and human, D.K. is advising against it. Cultivate, he says, the humility which is based on understanding and vision, and so serve the world, your fellow disciples, and serve me also. As the major point of your contact with hierarchy. Well, this is pretty straight advice. And Alice Bailey was fond of repeating the old popular saying, mind your own business. It's hard for curious disciples to do that. And matters of personality and lower egotism somehow prove very fascinating to disciples. I'm sure we've all been there, and I have witnessed many a discussion about these very things. Well, X, Y, or Z just can't be what he or she claims. Look at his or her behavior. Look at his or her words, you know. That's that hypercritical attitude. That really is part of the glamour of interference, which interestingly is the sixth ray glamour. Now, because of the interruption which I had to handle, a few minutes more will tell me if I succeeded. But basically, we've just gone up to page 96. I think so. Yeah, we're pretty much in 96 and about to begin page 97. Well, these are such interesting and practical pieces of advice we're being given. And whether we attend to them or not, well, that's going to be, you know, our battle. DK basically says, look, I love you, the hierarchy loves you, we surround you with our care, but the battle is yours. So this would be then the end of program 41, and it's been a while, hasn't it? This is already September 9th, and it looks rather like, okay, here comes another one of those calls. I've got to tend to it. Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, anyway, there are these emergencies that do arrive. So this is the 9th of September, like I say, kind of Seven Ray Institute Day. And we really just looked at a page and a half or so. And we'll be beginning next time, program 43. We're still in section 9. We don't know what day it will be on. It keeps me up quite late to do the Afghanistan vigil. But okay, it will begin on page 96. So, friends, I hope that's enough to orient us. And the length of this program may be very odd. I have no idea yet what the length is, but maybe around an hour, a little less, a little more. So we'll continue until we finish this section one of Dyna One. We've already done section three. I'll have to think about how to deal with those letters, if possible. I don't know. It's a big book, two big books. So let's see what can be done. Okay, lots of love from Tuya and me and the whole team, and we'll, communications team, we'll be seeing you soon. Okay, bye-bye.